You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Well, I knew Helen. Not super close, but we'd known each other over the years. She was a fan of my film Campaign, which I made back in the old days, back in 1999 that came out, about the first MMP election. And over the years, I'd kind of been on her list of people she rang up when she needed a favour, and, you know, we'd gotten to know each other a little bit. So I did know her, and, you know, I liked her. And when it came out how sick she was, which seemed hard to believe, given the sort of just the life energy that she always just threw out into the world. We talked about it a few times and found quite an interesting rapport somehow. You know, I'm a volunteer firefighter and have dealt with death a lot, I think. And so we ended up quite a frank, no bullshit kind of conversation about it, which you didn't get to have all that often, I suspect. And so we got to talk about it. So I went and sat down with her the very first day after she had finished working at the CTU. She was a bit anxious about not having a job, didn't really know what she was going to do, didn't really know whether having a video camera filming her doing whatever that was going to be a good idea or not. Didn't know how long she'd live. But I said to her, look, why don't we give it a go, see if it seems like a good idea and just, you know, get started. So we did.
So in terms of you approaching that, and obviously this is a very... It's not, I suppose, passion project's not the right word, right? But in the sense that you're...
Pretty grudges, actually.
Well, you're doing it, right? You're doing it in the sense that you know that it's right to do, but you also don't know what this story is going to look like. So how did you go into that?
Well, you know, it's funny. I think a lot of documentary film talk, you know, makes it sound like they're kind of drama films that you kind of, you know, make up. Like your filmmaker starts out with it all figured out and then tries to cast it almost, you know? I don't believe in making documentaries like that. I don't think that's how they work, you know. I didn't quite know what the film was about, but I knew that Helen was an important and interesting person, and there were some things about her that I really wanted to understand better and wanted to be able to get to the bottom of and share with people. That was my starting point.
Mm. So who is Helen Kelly?
Well, okay, so Helen had a pretty unusual upbringing. Her dad was Pat Kelly, who was a very prominent... you know, one of those famous kind of British-accented, stroppy militant unionists from the 60s and 70s. He was also a communist, as was her mother. Her mother came from a much more affluent, middle-class background. Like her great-great-great-grandfather was the first judge in New Zealand and, you know, from the Eichelbaums and so on and so on. So she had this interesting kind of very poor Liverpudlian left-wing father and a quiet kind of sort of, you know, lefty, quite affluent mother. And that's who they were. They were famous in New Zealand. They were arch rivals of Rob Muldoon. And her dad was quite likely a prime candidate of the Trades Hall bombing in 1984, which very nearly killed him and did kill his very close friend and Helen's mate, Ernie Abbott. So, you know, she came up through that turbulent time in the 70s, but whereas perhaps for most people that was a time of quite high engagement and commitment with social issues, it was quite life and death for the Kellys, you know, a bit more serious. So she had that in her background, and I had kind of imagined, a lot of people imagine, that's where all her politics and all her social activism comes from, but my feeling is it's a little more subtle than that, because a lot of people had similar upbringings and didn't turn into Helen Kelly. I think what she really came out of that with most prominently of all was this very deep humanism. It's not even quite the right word. She would quite sincerely, everyone she engaged with anywhere, no matter what, would engage with as a full human being of equal standing. Everyone was as good as everyone else, and it didn't matter if it was a work thing or, you know, someone selling her a sandwich or, you know, the Prime Minister. It was all kind of the same. And New Zealanders think that's what we like, right? That's kind of, oh, yeah, it's the Kiwi way. When you actually hang out with someone who actually is like that, you realise, nah, that's pretty unusual. And it's got very interesting implications for how you live your life. And I think it turned out that was sort of the answer to my question. That's who she was.
Mm. Mm. And was that the only question that you had, or were there other questions?
Actually, at a really surfacey level, the most interesting thing that drew me to Helen first was that when she would talk about political things or social issues or whatever, which she often did in public, she had an absolutely prodigious social media appetite. She had like 18,000 tweets in her last 5 years, something like that, just a ridiculous number. It never really sounded dry. It didn't sound like a policy position. It actually sounded like it was about people. And I just thought that was very interesting because it was very unusual. There's very few politicians or political public figures in New Zealand that sound like they're talking about people very often, and she always did. And I was very interested to know why that was the case or how that was the case. It seemed like more than just, you know, clever communications. There was something else going on. And there was, you know. I think actually the essence of it was simply that she had relationships with people from right across society, like real ones, you know. They were her mates. And she was engaged with their lives in a completely practical, real way. Right through her life. And again, you go, oh, yeah, well, we're New Zealanders. That's what we're like. Well, yeah, it's not, you know, yeah. Especially in Wellington.
And I want to touch on that, I guess, more because, like you say, we supposedly kind of have this idea of ourselves as being very friendly or being very, I don't know what the buddy-buddy or able to kind of engage with anybody. But actually, you're right. There's a very particular skill or way of being that means that you can engage with anybody of any sort, you know, that like she's engaging with people from, like you say, all walks of life. And there's quite a particular, there's obviously this real engagement with rural communities in this film because that's who she is engaging with, and a totally different sort of socioeconomic status. And she's kind of able just to walk into, there's a part earlier in the film where one of your characters speaks to how she came in the first time she met this family, and this woman expected her to maybe just talk about herself or how she's great or what she can do, but she basically just engaged and
sat
created
on the floor
a relationship.
And played with her kids.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And what she was doing was creating relationships.
Well, the thing is, you know, it wasn't just that she had a good rapport with people. I mean, she did, but it wasn't just that. She actually just didn't have the boundary that prevented that from flowing into an ordinary relationship with people. They were her friends. She had friends, like actual friends, from all over the place in all kinds of circumstances alive in her life all the time. And that is unusual. That really is. I mean, how many politicians have mates who live on the minimum wage? I'd suggest it's pretty close to zero.
Yeah.
You know, even on the left. And that's actually has really important implications for our understanding of how the world works. She was very connected to the lived lives of working New Zealanders. I mean, very sincerely. Yeah.
And actually, the people that... Yeah, like you say, even in the left, those who are supposedly fighting for those people, what lived experience do they have of those lives?
Well, look, I mean, I'm not gonna say anything flash about myself. I mean, I'm you know, like a Wellington liberal, you know, like many others, and you know, we all have really top grade Facebook feeds. We're really right on, but how many of us actually are engaged in those worlds? You know, not many. And what really struck me about it wasn't so much that Helen was, it was just that I found it really arresting to realise that the rest of us weren't. It's not who we think we are. And actually for me, that's what the big business of this film is. It's really invites the audience to consider who we are now as New Zealand, and does the way we behave actually align with the values that we still kind of flatter ourselves that we have. Yeah,
that's brilliant. I almost want to leave it there, but I've got lots more to say.
Please go. Let's go.
I mean, throughout the sort of beginning of the film, there's it's quite light. I felt, and there's a very particular point where I feel that the death, I guess, becomes much more real, and there's kind of a change of a feel for me. Anyway, that's how I read it. So what you've just described is that kind of human element and an encouragement for New Zealanders to kind of even take that challenge on board. But is this film also about death?
Yeah. I mean, Helen dies in the film, and it's inevitable that was really, you know, that was part of, you know, the journey of the film, but also she was dealing with death, you know. She was dealing with Pike River, she was dealing with families who'd lost men in forestry, she was dealing with what sincerely are life and death issues for tens of thousands of New Zealand families. And you know, it's not so much that I wanted to make a film about dying, but I think that the context of dying creates a particular moral clarity around some of these issues. You know, we might argue or disagree about, you know, how resources should be distributed in society, but hopefully we would pretty much all agree that if your husband, usually husband, is killed at work, then there ought to be justice about that. You know, it ought to be treated as an important thing and there should be an investigation. And if somebody's stuffed up, then they ought to be prosecuted if it's against the law. But, you know, actually, it became very clear making the film that that isn't what happens. It like almost, not well, nearly universally, but overwhelmingly just straight out doesn't happen. There isn't any justice for many, many people. And why the hell not? It's actually really quite, I personally found it disturbing to see and reflect on the fact that that's missing and that the fact that it's happening to the people that it's happening to don't even seem that surprised by that, because that aligns with a lot of their experience of our culture and society.
That part of the film was quite eye-opening for me, because I've never worked in a sort of forestry sector or any other of those other industries that even Helen describes them being very dangerous. And the process of watching that kind of court case and how very real those effects are on people, and then there not being any sort of justice
Well, I mean, you know, it's in the film, but for the period that Helen was particularly focusing on, there were 900 serious accidents in the forestry sector, including, 50 or 60 deaths. And out of all of those, WorkSafe made 12 prosecutions. And all of the rest of the cases, basically they concluded that there was no case to answer. Nobody was responsible. There was no need to do anything else. I mean, think about that.
That's shocking.
Isn't it?
Like it's a not even fathomable number. We look at
coal mine collapses and people die in China, and we tut, oh my god, how terrible, happens here, I think these men, I think all men, very overwhelmingly men, who this happens to are poor, they're brown and they're provincial, and it's considered normal. Even a WorkSafe inspector in the film describes it as the nature of the beast. You know, our forestry sector kills 7 times more people than the next most dangerous industry. In any given year, based on the last statistics I saw, out of 7,000 people in the industry, 1,000 will be on ACC because they've been injured at work. I mean, the numbers are just mind-boggling.
And then you go back to that attitude you're talking about. I mean, even the fact that they've said the nature of the beast, it's that same attitude as, oh, she'll be right.
Exactly. I mean, you know, one of the hardest things, I think, in a society is to look at something that's always, or been the case for a long time, and say, well, hang on a minute, what the hell, you know? It's almost like waking up from a sleep. There are things that we just simply accept and take for granted. You know, and Pike River is actually a rather similar and good example. I mean, it's changed now. But for a very long time, everybody nearly seemed to just think, oh, God, why don't they just get over it? Okay, so 29 people died, and okay, no one's been prosecuted, and oh, we haven't really quite recovered the bodies or the evidence, but time to move on. What the hell is that about?
On that, your film obviously is following Helen, but you're also dealing with those issues, like you say, the unions, Pike River, and then medicinal cannabis comes into it.
So, it does, yeah.
So what, I mean, given the kind of state we're in at the moment, do you think that Helen would be pleased with the way things are going at the moment?
I imagine she probably would be pleased that it seems, you know, possible that there's going to be a referendum get up in time for the general election. You know, I mean, Helen's position on this was actually reasonably moderate. You know, her she said she wouldn't really have an opinion unless she'd tried it herself. But when she got sick, she did try it herself. It was funny, you know. I mean, she was pretty square, Helen. She didn't like doing illegal things. She didn't like even pot. She was quite, you know. But when people heard that she was sick, it would just start turning up on her doorstep. All these different unctions and lotions and potions would just appear there. So she gave it a go. And, you know, I mean, my observation was that it allowed her to stop feeling sick and to therefore eat and to therefore continue to work. And for her, that was enormously valuable. And she liked it. I mean, and she found that it was better than, you know, morphine or the other things that she had available to her. So, I mean, it's quite a modest proposition. For her, it worked, and she wanted to keep doing it, and she didn't want to break the law. And she felt other people should have that same right. And it's about the strength of it. I mean, it seems quite straightforward when it's approached that way. You know, you can actually take medical cannabis in New Zealand, but it's so expensive that it's still unavailable to the majority of people who might benefit from it. She just thought that was unfair. Yeah.
Mm. I'm going to try and pull some things together.
Oh, good luck.
To
good. Let's do that.
Unless there's anything else you want to say.
Look, I mean, what I would like to say is that New Zealand is quite a hostile environment to making films of this nature. So, I mean, it would be a good idea for people to see it when they can and to help us to bring other people to it. This has been a labour of love by many people, not just me. And, you know, we've done it with the goal of bringing these questions to as many New Zealanders as we can. And we'd absolutely appreciate, you know, as much help as we can get to bring people to it now that it's actually in cinemas. It's touring the whole country. It's going to be 32 screenings in 13 centres over the next couple of months. If we get a really good showing there, you know, we'll be able to take it to more deeply to the rest of the country later. And that's what we've all been striving for many years now. Mm. So it'd be awesome if anyone can help. Find us on Facebook and we'll tell you how.
We've talked about these sort of issues, but again, it's about Helen. She says at one point when they're waiting for somebody to get in the van, and she makes a joke saying some of us don't have long to live.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that touches, of course, on her sort of just nature as a person, which is hilarious.
Yeah,
and
she was a dick. She was really funny. Yeah.
At the same time. But
she was also brave, though, you know. I mean, it's not the easiest thing to make a joke about yourself dying. It was a kind thing to do, I think.
And then she's also just the way that she's – what I see in that film of her is approaching a hugely – you know, I mean, you're facing your death, and she just continues to do her. She just continues.
Oh, very much and, so. Maybe more so.
And so, I sort of, yeah, I guess what I'm asking is who is this film for? But thinking about that idea of we're looking at death and we're watching death, but we're watching somebody who's who's fighting for everybody else in that same moment. And there's a great speech from one of the judges in one of those scenes where they just sort of acknowledge, you know, they said it would be remiss not to, you know, it's like, how can we not acknowledge this person?
It's funny, again, I'm a bit unusual of filmmakers in this way. I don't actually have a particular audience in mind. I think this, I mean, generally speaking, I'd say this is a film for New Zealanders. I think, you know, some people will engage first with Helen as a human being who's facing, you know, the ultimate test, really, of who we are and what we want to be in the world and what she does with her last year of life. I mean, what would you do with your last year of life? I keep getting asked that, and I actually don't know the answer. But for Helen, it was obvious. She just wanted to do what she'd always done. She really was who she was, and it just made it even a bit more so, you know. And her ultimate frustration about dying, I think, was that she just was going to have to – she was going to run out of ability to work, which is, you know, interesting to reflect on. But as I said before, you know, this really does start to raise quite profound and I find troubling questions about who we are as a country and a society and, you know, what we think is normal and what we think is okay. I mean, Helen was super brave getting out there literally, you know, the day of chemo, the day of radiation, and continuing to fight. Why is that necessary? You know, why is it necessary for the people of Pike River to spend 9 years so far, you know, right in the aftermath of this horrendous personal disaster in their lives, to be then expected to spend the next decade fighting for basic justice? What's that about? You know, these are important questions, and I'd really, really like New Zealand to just spend an hour and a half sitting in the dark with each other, just thinking about that, because we don't very often.
And then we don't talk about it either.
No. And, you know, politics and religion, you know, too rude. I see, for me, it's not actually directly about politics. It's really about values. It's about, you know, who do we want to be in the world? And why is there this big yawning gap between that and what actually happens for a lot of people who are in a shitty position in our society? That's a good question to spend a bit of time thinking about. I'm making the film sound like, you know, the most miserable thing ever. It's quite fun a lot of the time.
It's very pleasant and there's very beautiful moments in it.
Yeah. Oh, thank you very much. Yeah.
No, it's definitely not a miserable film.
No. Everybody here, not miserable. No, it's fun. I think it's also a film about a cool New Zealander doing stuff that I think, you know, many of us would be really proud to do as Kiwis. So it's fun in that way too.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.